If you saw the movie Milk, the stunning film about the life of Harvey Milk, a leader in the gay rights movement and the first openly gay supervisor in San Francisco, you might have recognized this corner, the corner of Cedar and Spruce. Because at the start of the film, the directors chose to use newsreel footage of the debate that was raging in California at the time about that year's Proposition 6, which was also known as the Briggs Initiative. Again, the year was 1978, and this proposition proposed to force all school districts in California to fire any teacher or teacher's aide who was found to have engaged in public homosexual conduct or public homosexual activity. At first, buoyed by the efforts of the crusader Anita Bryant and others, the proposition had a majority of support. As the campaign progressed, however, and politicians from both parties began to rally against it, the tide began to turn. As an indicator of this shift, in the film, one of the newsreel clips in Milk is from 1978, and it is a news interview with the Reverend Bill Clancy, then the rector of All Souls Parish. In the interview shown in the film, Bill Clancy, dressed in his clericals, standing in front of this church's sign, Bill is clear in his opposition to the Briggs Initiative. A full 3.5 decades before another proposition preventing equal rights would come to the voters of the state of California, Bill gave voice to what he recognized as the movement of the Spirit in that time and place. His voice, joined with Harvey Milk's and Sally Gearhart's, Ronald Reagan's, yes, that Ronald Reagan, and millions of others, gave clear witness to the dignity of every human being. And their witness became one of the early points and the long arc of the moral universe as it continues to bend towards justice. Now, it is easy, especially with the hindsight of 35 years, to see Bill Clancy's interview and the actions of others like him as prophetic. Prophetic like a prophet of old, like Jeremiah or Hosea, and it was. But what I would like for us to spend some time with this morning in this iconic text from the Acts of the Apostles is with a slightly different lens of what it might mean to be prophetic. For so often when I hear this story, I am amazed at the noise like a violent wind and the tongues of fire resting on the disciples' heads. And then I'm amazed by the speaking so that all can understand from all known parts of the world at the time and each understanding in their own native tongue. This often captures my attention so completely that I overlook this most crucial question, because after all of the noise and the fire, after all have heard about God's deeds of power, an essential question is asked. Did you all catch it this morning? The question was, after seeing all this, what does this mean? What does this mean? Well, in response, Peter begins to speak to the crowds who are gathered there in amazement and in confusion and in skepticism. Now, we only heard a portion of his sermon in today's reading. It continues on with Peter laying out the case for Christ, a critical first argument for what has just taken place in the resurrection. He begins by assuring people that his disciples aren't drunk. And if you'll notice his logic, it's not because they haven't had anything to drink, but because it's only 9 o'clock in the morning. But after that, he quotes, but really, actually, he paraphrases from the prophet Joel. I say paraphrase because in Peter's retelling in this setting, he actually changes some of the language. And he shares with the gathered this central image from the book of the time when God's Spirit will be pouring out everywhere. And this is where it gets interesting, because in quoting this section of Joel, Peter is making a claim, actually a couple of them. First, what he is saying is this: remember one of our prophets who said that this was going to happen? Well, it has begun. The Spirit is moving now. And second, just who is this Spirit pouring out upon? Was it just Peter, the rock? No. Was it just the apostles, now with Matthias? No. It is spilling out everywhere. You cannot contain it. Here are the words of Joel that Peter uses, paraphrased again by Eugene Peterson. I will pour out my Spirit on every kind of people. Your sons will prophesy, also your daughters. Your young men will see visions. Your old men dream dreams. When the time comes, I'll pour out my Spirit on those who serve me, men and women both, and they'll prophesy. That last part, now I'll switch to the NRSV. Even upon my slaves, both men and women, in those days I will pour out my Spirit, and they shall prophesy. Now that last phrase, and they shall prophesy, right? It's not found in Joel's text, either in the Hebrew or in the Septuagint Greek. This is now an addition, either made by Peter or by the author of Luke and Acts. And thanks to the biblical scholar Brian Peterson, that's where I would like for us to spend our time this morning. Because friends, this isn't just about Peter prophesying. This isn't simply about the leader, right? People wearing these kinds of clothes. What this text opens up for us is that the prophetic action is always located in the community. Peter's words may be heard, but it is the whole body that is speaking. Well, now that's all well and good, you might say, but I didn't sign up to be a prophet. I understand that. Neither at first did Harvey Milk. With some confidence, I can say that Bill Clancy would never have called himself a prophet either. It's kind of like Dorothy Day being called a saint. Ironically, this very occasion is so wonderfully close to happening in the Roman Catholic Church as Dorothy Day progresses towards sainthood. But it's ironic because Dorothy once said, "Don't call me a saint. I don't want to be dismissed that easily." When they call you a saint, it basically means that you are not to be taken seriously. Right? Now, what did she mean by that? Well, what she meant was that it was her fear, and I think it was a justified fear, that she would be set apart in a way that would let all of us off the hook. Right? Then people could say, "Oh, that Dorothy, I could never do what she does. She is just a saint." I believe it's the same way with prophets. We tend to think of prophets as singular people, like soccer or pop stars, right? Prince, Madonna, Sting, Isaiah, Amos, Micah. Short names, long shadows. But what is happening here on Pentecost, the Hellenization of the Jewish festival of Shavuot at the height of Aviva, or spring, what is happening here is that the gift of prophecy is not reserved for the few. In fact, with this Spirit on the loose, This gift is falling freshly on many. What does this mean? Since I still see some concerned faces out there, a few reminders about prophecy. Although prophets foretell what is in store for a community, prophecy is not simply telling the future. And although the prophets are deeply concerned with social justice, Walter Brueggemann reminds us that prophets are not primarily political agents in any direct sense, nor are they social activists. So then, what are they? They are modes of mediation. Prophets are interpreters. They speak two languages, if you will. They hear the words of the divine and then speak in the language of the street. In the words of our godly play stories, prophets are people who come so close to God, and God comes so close to them that they know what God wants them to do. Prophets are truth tellers. They remind the people of who and whose they are. And often a prophet does this through the power of imagination, through poetry, through possibility. Some of the more wild prophets, and that's saying something, some of the more wild prophets are sort of like today's performance artists. You remember Jeremiah, right? He had this big, he wore an oxen yoke around his shoulders to represent the yoke that Israel would soon be in. Right? And I'm reminded of the performance artist Marina Abramovich, who a couple of years ago at MoMA in New York spent 2.5 months, 6 days a week, 7 hours a day, seated opposite a chair in an exhibition entitled "The Artist is Present." People were invited to sit opposite her for a minute, or an hour, or a day. And in a world of repeated interruption and divided attention, she sat facing them, simply present with them. A prophet invites the world to see where God is present, not in an abstract way, but again, in the words of Brueggemann, concretely to a particular time, place, and circumstance. When people ask, "What does this mean?" a prophet points the way. Peter raised his voice to address. Dorothy wrote her words. Bill Clancy spoke clearly. "Today I preach." But friends, as with these tongues of fire, the outpouring of the Spirit was then and must always be about the community. Two of the more formative feasts that we share in our parish hall, that of the Open Door Dinner and of Lunch Bunch, were begun by the people of this parish during times of great transition. They were supported by the leadership of the time, but the community of this congregation, some of them worshiping here in this space right now, listened to the Spirit and spoke about her movement. They were prophets, people pointing to God among us. Again, Pentecost is not just about Peter the Galilean, but this Pentecost is definitely about Peter Sierra and Bruce Gidland and Caroline Taylor, right? For these are the three beautiful babies that we are baptizing in the family of families in a few moments. We don't often talk about this. It's a little scary sometimes to talk about this, but part of what we are doing today is beginning to raise prophets. Right? Teaching them to look for God in this world and then telling us. Right? To tell of truth, to speak of possibility. Today we name them Caroline and Bruce and Peter. But 15 years ago in this church, we named them Margaret, Davis, Riley, Julia, Megan. Right? These are the young women and young men who are baptized here, who have been discerning this past year about confirmation and who will be prophesying. Right? Prophesying. In a couple of weeks, in this space, as they engage the vows made for them at their baptism. What does this mean? It means, friends, that we, all of us, are prophets. And that shrinking from this calling, being fearful of what may come, will do us no good. There is too much at stake in a world that shrugs at violence, that hates what it does not understand, and has little regard for what it does not profit from. Yes, pointing to a truth that claims a glorious impossible involves risk. I have no doubt that we will be seen much like the disciples were. People will sneer, right? They will think that we are high, ironic as that may be. They may say things like, I don't know if you've seen this bumper sticker in this neighborhood, but don't pray in my school and I won't think in your church. And yet, the more that I walk these streets and enter into conversation, I realize that there are many, many who are looking up from the changes and the chances of life and are asking the same question, what does this mean? Friends, that's where you and I, we enter in, to watch, to listen, to pay attention, to be still and to come close in our lives and in the life of the world around us, to look for inconvenient love, for extravagant forgiveness, for unbounded compassion. For the Spirit is on the loose in the world, and it is for us to point the way.